Good afternoon. My name is Zeke. It's 2:03, going on 2:04. This is Movement Museum. I'm joined in studio by Amy Blackmore, Allison Elizabeth. What's your last name?
Burns.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Burns.
Yeah, and my last name is Hand, for anybody who doesn't know that already. We're Movement Museum. We're talking about Dance on the Radio, and I like that song by Alexandrine Roy. I'm feeling very, very mellow, although the thumping coming across from the other room is...
interesting.
Not exactly in line with everything. Yeah, wow, not even any little bit of adrenaline whatsoever. I could go to sleep right now.
Well, is there no need for a poem? Is that
no,
what you're trying to tell me?
No. There's always a need for a poem.
Well, good. The poem I chose this week is not necessarily about a dancer, but it's a nature poem. But there's a lot of really nice movement in the language of it, so I wanted to share it. It's called Sunlit Morning by Mary Montang, and here we go. A sunlit September morning, bright balsam light, planning through poles of Sitka spruce, ambering under a honeycomb canopy to tan the leaf litter, its shag of needles, shale of beach, now a sound, soft shush, like finest rain, a light sprayed through the trees. But there is no rain, no wind. I look up through the rough firs of spruce to see a definite motion, a purposeful swing. The cause imprints momentarily against pale yellow glare, as it scuttles along a branch, a lithe weasel, like body with a brush of tail that's thinned by combing of the light. It's headlong up the trunk, then trapezes across to the next tree and is followed by another, then another. The tree's pine-green plumage swishes and sweeps as the three red squirrels make a vertical shalom to ford the air. I curdle with pleasure. A remnant of ancient fauna survives in a hybrid plantation. The lead squirrel descends to the floor, glances back, pixie head, monocular gaze, holding me briefly, its forelegs splayed beyond the hunch of back. The feathered tail. I flick for the others, and when I look again, the squirrel is gone. They are all gone. The woods are silent. Again, that's Sunlit Morning by Mary Montang.
Thank you. That was cool.
Good.
And yeah, there we, where's my cheat sheet, my note thing here? Last summer, 18th of June to be exact, over at Circuits, they had the Semaine Danse Musique, where they then had a bunch of roundtable discussions and so on. This one took place, as I said, on the 18th of June. It's with Isabel Van Grimde, Dominique Porte, and Daniel Desnoyers. And I apologize for the sound quality. I'm doing my best to clean it up, but it is not easy.
De Dominique travaille avec Laurent Massé depuis des années. Je ne sais pas c'est qui a initié cette intrusion dans votre territoire de création de nombreux compositeurs. Je pense à Charles Patterson, par exemple. Est-ce que ça vient de tes besoins à toi, Laurent, comme créateur, d'intégrer l'apport de nouveaux compositeurs, ou c'était des idées qui provenaient de volonté de dominer, d'intégrer, je te pose des questions à toi, Laurent.
Bonsoir tout le monde.
On est tous par là.
Je pense que c'est assez mutuel en fait, parce que c'est vrai que Dominique et moi, on a eu une relation depuis très longtemps, c'est très proche au niveau collaboration artistique, mais je crois que Dominique aussi bien que moi, on a toujours aussi travaillé beaucoup dans d'autres champs d'action. Puis c'est bon, on aime ça, je pense que c'est vraiment important. J'ai toujours encouragé même à travailler avec d'autres gens. Puis, moi, j'ai travaillé beaucoup avec d'autres gens aussi. Puis quand on se retrouvait, ça nourrissait beaucoup aussi le travail de chacun et le travail qu'on faisait ensemble. Puis pour ce qui est de Charles Papazov, c'est Denis qui a m'aidé et j'ai vraiment encouragé. J'ai vraiment. J'étais vraiment pour ça.
Oui. Mais je veux juste revenir un petit peu en arrière. Dis-moi si c'est ça. Non, bon, lui aussi, ça doit être partenaire à 11 ans. Bon, voilà. Tout le monde a eu la
Florent qui faisait de la guitare reggae, jumelée. Il était dans un groupe de reggae, puis on était colocataires. Donc on a commencé par discuter de ce qu'on aimait dans la vie. Donc ça a commencé comme ça. Puis moi, je ne chorégraphiais pas à ce moment-là, puis je disais surtout, je ne veux pas chorégraphier, je veux trouver quelqu'un de qui travailler longtemps, et c'est tout. Donc, en une discussion informelle. Puis à un moment donné, j'ai commencé à faire un solo, et je ne me suis pas, même pas basée sur une musique, je ne me suis même pas dit, oh, je vais m'inspirer de la musique. C'est plutôt que c'était l'idée de répondre à un univers. Puis cet univers-là, pour le premier solo que j'ai fait en 93, c'était inspiré d'un auteur roumain, Panaï Tistrati, qui s'appelait Codine, puis ça a été le titre du solo. Et quand je dis l'atmosphère, c'est vraiment ça, parce que Codine, c'est un monsieur énorme dans le livre. Donc ça n'avait aucun rapport avec le théâtral, tout ça. Il y avait toute une atmosphère dans l'histoire. Et le premier solo, Laurent est à la guitare, live, en direct. Puis après ça, de plus en plus, il y a eu, qui allait dans l'électro-acoustique, puis la recherche de sons beaucoup plus concrets. Alors quand Charles Papazov est arrivé en 2004, c'était aussi le retour à l'acoustique versus l'électronique. Donc c'est comme une autre balance, quelques années plus tard, on a aussi développé plusieurs pièces où le son souvent était traité live, comme dans Laurence Flex ou qu'est-ce qu'il y a
Rodin Probable.
Rodin Probable, là c'était vraiment le déclencheur au sol, vraiment. On essayait de faire une partition en temps, et c'était quoi le rapport du mouvement, puis du déclenchement, le temps que le déclenchement prenait, le temps d'aller déclencher la pédale d'effet, le temps que la pédale d'effet venait dans l'espace pendant qu'on continue à danser. Donc il y avait plusieurs, ça c'était dans Rodin Probable 5 minutes. Donc ça c'était un peu les deux exemples, mais c'est vrai que bref, l'arrivée de chant, c'était le retour quelque part à l'acoustique. Et aussi, chaque fois que je m'inspirais de l'univers, avant de m'inspirer de la musique, sauf, c'est drôle, pour le Yeti et Exit. C'est-à-dire que c'est drôle, dès qu'ensemble, quand la musique est écrite avant, que c'était des compositions déjà faites, c'est sûr que là, c'est facile de s'inspirer de la musique pour l'atmosphère. Mais justement, Frédéric, je suis curieuse que j'avais plein de questions à vous poser sur le processus de création, justement, en lien avec la musique. Comment, justement, est-ce que vous avez tous les deux travaillé avec une musique originale et travaillé tous les deux avec des œuvres issues du répertoire, de différentes esthétiques musicales? Comment cette différence-là, comment ça affecte votre processus? Comme Isabelle, comment a affecté ton processus? Tu parlais tu disais pour moi, les chemins de traverse, ça a été le charnière dans mon parcours chorégraphique. Tu parlais de changement au niveau du langage, au niveau de même la représentation de ton langage sur scène. Tu veux nous parler un peu de cet affect, pas un affect, mais comment la traversée des œuvres affecte ton culture?
En fait, les chemins traversent, c'est en fait le début de ce travail avec l'œuvre ouverte. Et ça a été un petit peu un accident de parcours parce que je travaillais avec le NEM sur la partition de Vortex Temporum de Gérard Griset. Est une pièce évidemment tout à fait écrite et assez costaud. Et je travaillais depuis un certain nombre d'années avec certaines formes d'improvisation avec les danseurs dans le processus. Et j'ai eu envie, j'ai proposé à l'Agora dans la nuit où on était dans le processus de création de Vortex, de faire un exercice un petit peu ludique, c'est-à-dire avec les matériaux que j'étais en train de créer pour Vortex Temporum, de laisser, d'avoir ces matériaux et être confrontés à d'autres musiques que la musique de Vortex Temporum, en fait. Et donc on a créé trois soirées différentes, une avec le même d'ailleurs, une à improviser à partir de Vortex Temporum, chose que le NEM n'avait jamais fait, Et une soirée où c'était le groupe de table, donc un stage de voice, une soirée où c'était un groupe de musiciens électro-acoustiques. Et c'était tous les mêmes matériaux chorégraphiques chaque soir. Et pour la première fois, j'ai gardé une improvisation avec les danseurs étaient en impro. C'est une forme d'impro, c'est-à-dire qu'ils ont, le vocabulaire, ils ont leur concept de composition et de vocabulaire, ils ont en fait une partition qui indique plein de choses, la courbe dynamique de la pièce, les rapports à avoir avec la musique, le type de rapport à avoir avec la musique dans chaque partie, etc. Et ça ressemblait un petit peu à un exercice que j'avais fait avec le CM, qui était 3 minutes d'un secret, où le même solo était confronté à des compositions musicales différentes à chaque soir. Et ça s'apparentait un petit peu de ça, mais ce qui était vraiment nouveau, la raison pour laquelle je dis que c'était très important, c'est que c'est la première fois que j'ai travaillé en œuvre ouverte et que j'ai plus jamais retravaillé autrement. Alors c'est très lié avec le travail avec la musique, en fait c'est la musique qui a déclenché ça, mais c'est pas le travail avec la musique qui a vraiment changé à ce moment-là, mais ce qui a changé c'est le travail des interprètes, entre autres, parce que les interprètes sont devenus des partenaires très différents dans ce processus, c'est-à-dire qu'ils étaient informés de plein de choses, ils étaient leur corps était rompu au matériel, au vocabulaire gestuel, ils étaient vraiment informés des enjeux avec la musique, des types de dialogues, etc. Ils avaient leurs propres décisions à prendre, donc ils travaillaient complètement différemment à l'interprète. Et en fait, le fait qu'ils aient eu cet exercice-là, qu'ils aient dansé ce matériel avec la musique de Tom et les musiciens de Tom qui ont un rapport très différent aux danseurs sur scène, ce sont des musiciens qui improvisent aussi, c'est très différent du rapport qu'ils pouvaient avoir avec les musiciens du même qui en général n'improvisent pas, qui sont dirigés par un chef, et les électro-acousticiens qui sont derrière leurs ordinateurs. Enfin, ils avaient des trois types de rapports avec des musiciens complètement différents, des types de dynamiques différentes qui ont enrichi leur expérience. Ça fait quand on s'est retrouvé à faire voir texte à tableau après, vraiment en fait, avec cette musique qui était complètement écrite et dirigée par un chef, et les musiciens et les danseurs par contre qui restaient en impro, ils étaient enrichis de toutes sortes de couches d'expérience. Et ils avaient une écoute de la musique qui est très différente, parce que ce qui est dans l'expérience très difficile, dans le travail que je fais avec les danseurs, c'est d'avoir cette écoute. Et c'est cette espèce de. Cette écoute avec une autre dynamique, quelque chose d'immédiat qui donne un tout autre rapport avec le public aussi, parce qu'ils doivent écouter. Ils doivent vraiment écouter pour pouvoir prendre des décisions. Donc c'est dans ça que je dis que ça a été extrêmement significatif pour moi, pour le danseur, pour le même aussi, je pense.
And we're back. It's 2:17. You're listening to Movement Museum, talking about dance on the radio. And yeah, I apologize again for that sound quality. It's the sort of thing where, yeah, I'm doing my best to try and clean it up and stuff like that. We will see if I can make part 3 work better. And yes, we're here now with Amy Blackmore, Allison Elizabeth Burns, and we got Co-Motion Farms Dance Week happening starting on Monday. Why don't you guys go wild and explain what this is? Because last time you were in, I was very, very confused.
Fair enough. There's a lot going on. Commotion Farms Dance Week is an entire week of dance events and workshops happening at Mainline Theater. It's also happening at Wants and Needs Dance Studio. And Allison, why don't you go ahead and explain some of our events?
Cool beans. Our main event is called Common Space, which is a compilation show of a whole bunch of different works by different choreographers. And these are all works with a past history that are remounted. So they go through the process of being reworked and presented for stage one more time. And then we also have a series of workshops. We've got a Rasa Box workshop, we've got a tap workshop, structured improvisation workshop, publicity workshop, grant writing workshop.
Hold on. Slow down. I want to know more about these things. And you run through them like this, then at which point Yeah.
That's the idea. I want to overwhelm you by how much awesome stuff there is happening at once.
So you're going to be tired next week, huh?
Oh, yeah. No kidding. Yeah, if you take all the workshops, you're going to be so well-informed and well-exercised. Anyway, so we have three movement workshops happening. One of them is tap. Mm-hmm. So basics of, you know, tap dancing and rhythm and technique.
Who's giving the tap workshop?
Heather Keeler, who has over 20 years of experience in tap dance.
Okay, so then difference between tap and clogging.
Oh, my goodness. I think we went over this, didn't we?
Yes, we did. Uh-huh. We're pros on this.
So, yeah, if I do recall, I think it's more up tap dance.
And how did you guys figure out which workshops, what workshops?
Well, when we had a call for applications for the Common Space show, the compilation show, and in those application forms, we asked the people applying, you know, what would you be interested in taking? What do, you know, young choreographers and contemporary dancers these days want to know more about? So that's where we ended up with our list.
Were you overwhelmed with applications, or was it sort of just everything worked out just perfectly fine?
We were surprised, actually, with the number of applications we got for our first kind of round of asking for submissions from other people. It was great. We got a lot of people interested.
Okay.
It made our decision really difficult to make. When we had a jury get together to decide who was going to be in the Common Space Showcase, and it was really hard. I think it took us a good 5 or 6 hours of going over applications over and over and over again, because they were all really great. So.
Okay, and there, without naming any, because that was what I wanted to get, did anybody not make the cut? And if somebody didn't make the cut, then it says, that's you getting the cream at the top. But without naming names, what were the sort of things that you were looking for that would enable somebody to make the cut?
That's a great question, because, yeah, we wanted to make that very clear to all our applicants, because part of it was, you know, the quality of the work. But part of it was also feasibility of the work. If we thought we could get you to put it up in the limited amount of time that we had with the limited resources. And the third category, which is where a lot of people kind of got tripped up, is that how much they needed the opportunity. Because we really wanted to make this an opportunity for people who can't find this opportunity elsewhere. So if we felt like, you know what, your CV looks great, you're doing just fine, then we kind of passed them by, because we want to leave this for the other people who are maybe trying to choreograph for the first time. Like, we have a couple actors involved in the show this time, which is so exciting for us and so exciting for them. And, you know, who else is going to be like, yeah, here's an opportunity to show your choreography if you've never done it before?
Okay. And so, yeah, there. So then basically, yeah, this Common Space thing. So it's going to be, they're all working during the week to come up with a show and stuff like that. And everybody's sort of helping together, sort of like Andy, whatever his name is, and Judy Garland. I got a barn. My mom can make some costumes. Let's put on a show.
It's something like that. But we actually started our rehearsal process a little earlier. Everyone started to get working in early December over the Christmas vacation. And this week is kind of the final push. And we have some of the dancers are dancing in each other's work, are helping each other out as outside eyes, coming into the rehearsals. Allison and myself are going into rehearsals, giving our advice to people. And so they're kind of in this final push of, let's get the costumes together, let's edit our music, let's make this all happen. Oh, my God.
Okay, and yeah, what can you tell me about? Because then, so that's, if I get here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, there are 8 choreographers. I assume that slash in the middle means that Monica and Helene are doing something together?
Yes, they're teaming up.
Okay, so then there are 8 things, and so that's going to be the Common Space Showcases, 8 separate performances. Okay, what can you tell me? Pick a number or pick a name and tell me about them.
Okay, well, I'll go ahead.
After you, Alphonse, on the radio without saying after you.
Fair enough. We have Greg Crypto Selinger, who's going to be showing a work. Originally it was a solo that he had created that he turned into a trio with Forty and Taboo, who are two awesome breakdancers. Yeah. I believe they've been here before.
They were here, saw it as part of the Rubber Band Dance post-hip-hop project.
Exactly, and it's the same piece that we're giving them another opportunity to show. So they've decided that they want to try and clean it up a bit, see what they can do. And we have David Albert Toth coming in as an outside eye for them.
Okay. Who's David Albert Toth?
He is an amazing dancer. Okay. Love him. He was just in... I can't remember the name of the show, the Norman McLaren show that was at Cinq Mille Salles.
It was called Norman.
Oh, it was called Norman. Yes, mm-hmm. There we go.
Okay.
He was in that. He's a graduate from Concordia University, getting a lot of work these days. And I figured he'd be a great person to hook up with them, just to give some feedback mm-hmm. to them. So that's them.
Okay, and so then he's giving sort of like a what would be called on the architecture side a crit. He's seeing the performance and saying, this is good, this isn't good, that's, if you sort of flesh that out a little bit, it'll be more understandable.
Exactly.
Okay, so, and so he worked with them, and he's not going to be on stage then?
No, he won't. He's kind of there as just somebody to give them a little bit of feedback. Mm-hmm. The important thing to note about this piece in particular is that Greg, or known as Crypto, mm-hmm. Greg is actually in the work. And I find that, you know, often if you're choreographing a piece that you're also in, you kind of lose a bit of perspective on what it actually looks like. So
especially when you're sliding upside down on your head.
Yes. Breakdance piece.
Yes, that was what impressed, I think, was one of the more impressive moves I've ever seen anybody do. And he did it, and I know the piece, not inside out and backwards, but I can remember that instant, yes.
Oh, it's beautiful. I can't wait to see it.
Mm-hmm. And so did everybody get the sort of like mentoring sort of thing, and you had to choose people? Okay, so pick another name. Tell me about him, please.
Oh, how about Joseph Bembridge?
Okay.
He's one of the actors I was talking about who's you know, going on to this... into this field of choreography, which we're all really excited about. And the interesting thing about his piece is that he's using this process called RASA. And now I don't know a lot about it, which is why I'm going to take his workshop during the festival. But it's a process that you can use in both theater and in dance about you use space to define different emotional states.
And so you sort of like that corner is sad.
Exactly,
that corner
like this
is
part of
melancholy.
The floor.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And you move between them and things like that. So it's a practice to learn how to use, how to integrate like emotional states into performance. So yeah,
okay.
I might have to tell you more later.
No problem. He's giving the workshop as well as doing a performance?
Yes, and his performance is based on that process.
Okay.
And it's a huge, I think it's 8 people in that mm-hmm. piece, mm-hmm. so it's going to be a pretty big one.
Okay, and who's his mentor?
Who's he got?
Oh, I think that it's me. I'm planning to go in on Monday to his rehearsal to see what he's doing, and it's a process that I know little about myself, but I think that kind of works out kind of well as an outside eye, because I mean, some, you know, he's so connected to his process right now, and he's also learning, you know, what does it mean to create a movement piece that isn't necessarily theater, that's more on the dance side. And I think it'll be good for me to go in, not really know anything about RASAS boxes, and just kind of say what I think it's like as an audience member. You know, does it excite me? How do I feel about it? So that'll be me.
Yeah, I can see them moving between space and space, and so as to go from sad to happy and everything else in between. It's there the movement that gets made once you're in the space. That I'm sort of shrugging my shoulders and saying, I'm scratching my head saying, how's that going to work out?
I'm kind of scratching my head as well and looking forward to going into his rehearsal to see what that's about.
Okay.
There's another choreographer I'd like to actually talk about, Stephanie Bernard. She started studying dance. She did a couple years at Concordia University, and then she went to Toronto to study at Toronto Dance Theatre, mm-hmm. and she's been back in town for a while. And she created 3 separate solos that were in the show 60 by 60, which was in December.
Yep.
So she had 3 one-minute pieces. One was on herself, and the other 2 were on 2 other dancers. She's taken all 3 of these solos and kind of molded them together to create one longer piece. So there's little duets and trios and It's kind of interesting because the three solos had nothing to do with each other at first. So the challenge that she kind of has posed on herself is, how do I make this work? How do I make three ideas come together? Where's my through line? So that one should be quite interesting as well.
That actually, you reminded me that it's also really interesting where Joseph's piece came from, because it was actually a series of installations, primarily, of people literally in these like cardboard boxes in a gallery setting, kind of putting on these personas and living them out. And you would go and you would either like look through a window or through a little hole in the box, and it would be kind of like a voyeuristic kind of relationship. And so now, instead of taking like, I don't know, a theater piece or a dance piece or something like that and putting it on stage, he's taking this installation work and turning it into a performance dance piece. So again, it's like an interesting source for a work.
Yes, I'd say very, very interesting, to be honest. I want to hear what you think about it.
Well, I'll have to get back to you. Yeah, I'm excited though. I think there's a lot of potential there.
Okay, we got to... which will take a small break now, just because there are a couple of ads to be played and stuff like that. But we will be back at, probably about a minute or so. It's 2:29. You're listening to Movement Museum here on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. I like that sound. I have no idea exactly what it is, but it's coming from Charlie... what's his name? Cole Hayes' Explorers Club. The album's called Adventure, and it's been what's been playing underneath all of our talking so far. And let's use mute, something like that. Interesting. Keep everything, I don't know, just, yeah. My tongue is having difficulty keeping up with my brain.
The sound's actually kind of scaring me a little bit.
Okay, I'll bring it down slightly. And yeah, we're here with Amy Blackmore and Allison Elizabeth Burns talking about the Commotion Farm Dance Week that's happening, where we haven't even gotten to talk about any of the... well, we've done a little bit of the workshops in detail, but we haven't done anything about the Indie-ish dance mess.
All right, Indie-ish. Indie-ish.com. Go to it. Get information from that website. It's amazing.
How about the way they're listening on the radio? Explain to me here. Please.
Indie-ish is an independent artist network that was started by Risa Dickens. It's about, I guess it's 3 years old now, about. And it's
older than that, because there when I had my gallery, she had just started, and my gallery's almost been closed, or been closed almost 3 years.
Oh, all right. Mm-hmm. All right. So just about that then. And it's an independent artist network. Their main thing is their website, indie-ish.com. And if you go to the website, you can sign up, become a member. You can sell your products on it. Like, let's say you make soap, you can sell your soap. You can sell your mixtapes, your albums, your CDs. You can open your own blog and promote yourself on it. I have my own blog under Amy Blackmore. Where, you know, I put up information about Commotion Farms Dance Week and the Fringe or other events that I do. And once a month, they do an event that's organized by Paula Flallow called the Indie-ish Monthly Mess. And generally, it's a multidisciplinary evening with film, music. There's been dance in the past as well. They've done it during Pop Montreal. They've done it during the Fringe. And generally, it's held at Il Mattori. But this one is a special one. It's their Indie-ish Dance Mess, and they've never had a dance mess before. And I thought it would be a good idea to approach them to see if they'd want to be a part of our week. And they said yes. So at this Indie-ish Dance Mess, it's a multidisciplinary evening with a main focus on dance. Allison is actually going to be doing a structured improvisation that evening. Elizabeth Bruce, who's a local singer-songwriter, she'll be performing. We have Satellite Maps. Shitting Bear is also performing. We're also going to have a couple short films that are about dance. And yeah, it's going to be a fun night. I think there's going to be some fun audience participation activities with the movement happening as well.
Dum, dum, dum.
Okay.
There's also, it's a really casual event, and there's still opportunity to perform if there's any dancers out there listening who are like, yeah, I can totally throw something together, or I have a work in progress, or I have a finished piece that I want to show and see how the audience likes it. Like, you mm-hmm. can definitely...
For all the people who didn't make it into the common space stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
And yeah, actually, how did you guys come up with this whole idea for the dance week? We can. I remember asking you the question, and then conveniently I forgot the answer, so now I can ask it again.
Well, you know, it came out of this place of us being dance students a couple years ago and wanting an opportunity to show our work, and the fact that there was a lack of opportunity for us, especially being students, you know, not having degrees, we couldn't really apply to this and that. So it kind of came out of that.
Okay, although that's, yeah, to actually question, because my understanding, being a non-dancer, is that there are, yeah, I would say an awful lot, just looking at how much stuff that comes through the transom, to use the fancy term, of what is happening between Tangente, Agora de la Danse, Studio 303, and then breaking it down into the smaller schools and so on, which have their performances on an irregular basis. What am I seeing differently than you that makes it sort of difficult to put on stuff like this?
Well, I'm kind of feeling like, you know, Montreal choreographers are a dime a dozen. We've got some really great schools. People come from all over to come here to dance. So when it comes to opportunities, everybody's applying, which is great, and which is amazing. And, you know, places like 303, they're doing really great work, and they have, you know, it's not called Vernissage Danse anymore, but they have their, I think it's once every couple months, they have an evening where they have choreographers come in. They just had Resistance with Sasha Kleinplatz and such. And there's, you know, five slots or so each show, and these go to choreographers who've graduated, who have some experience behind their belt, and they're ready for that kind of thing. And we wanted to create an opportunity for the people who can't get into Tangente, that can't get into 303, because they're not there yet.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I did not realize that there was a whole pecking order, and it was my understanding that it was sort of just, there's an opportunity out there and so on.
Well, I think it's because of the quality that's out there as well. You know, if you have 20 people apply to something, chances are the second year dance student is going to get left out.
Okay. And there, yeah, speaking along this, I assume that you have plans to do this or something again next year, and are there plans as well to have stuff working through the year, or is it just going to be sort of an annual type of event?
I think we'd like to have other activities throughout the year. We're not 100% sure what they're going to be yet. We'd like to see how the dance week goes, and I think that we'll be asking our audience what they're interested in.
One of the things that occurs, that just off the top of my head, would be sort of the street fairs on Mount Royal or St. Catherine or Saint Laurent, and hooking up with those organizations that organize them to say, we want something for that duration. And yeah, like Nuit Blanche on, Nuit Blanche en Tableau Noir. Which is the Mount Royal one. That's a whole big, amazing party that happens for the entire week, or not week, 4 days, I think it is. That would be a nice place to see you guys do stuff.
That would be great, dancing overnight on Mount Royal Street while all the painting's going on. I'd love that. That would be fun. I think we're definitely going to have a workshop series going on at some point, because we're really getting some good feedback of what we're doing so far with that. And it would be nice to do, you know, a couple multidisciplinary evenings as well. And, you know, one of our main missions, not only, you know, it's not only to provide an opportunity for someone to show their work, but it's also to provide an opportunity to employ dancers and to employ choreographers in other ways. For example, we've just asked somebody to work as an assistant stage manager on our show next week, and she's generally a choreographer dancer, but it's nice to be able to give her that experience outside of creating, beyond that. And I'd like to create more of those opportunities as well.
Okay. And there, as far as one thing that occurs to me at mainline stuff, as far as the lighting and music and stuff like that for the shows, is it sort of bare bones, much more like a fringe festival type of thing where it sort of lights on, lights off? Or is it, does anybody have more elaborate sort of produced pieces?
They're not going to be as elaborate as what you may see at Place des Arts, but we have a great technical director who's going to take everybody's needs and do what he can with it. You know, we'll probably be able to give our choreographers some specials, you know, some floor lighting, because you can't have a good dance piece without good floor lighting, or side lighting, of course. But no, nothing too crazy, a little more than a fringe, but
Cool, and then the workshops, these things, how Yeah. First of all, yes, we should mention that there is a cost involved on some of the stuff, but you'd mentioned previously that some of the stuff, like the workshops, is free.
True story. Well, the workshops, all the money for the paid workshops goes straight to the teachers. Like, okay. It's, we don't touch it. It's just a matter of we're organizing it, facilitating it, and we're trying to make it really accessible to our participants as well. So there's always a discount where there is a price for our participants.
Mm-hmm. So which are the paying workshops?
The paying workshops. Well, we have a publicity workshop and a grant writing workshop.
Okay.
And they're $50 each. Is
they're
that
$50
right?
each or $75 for both?
Mm-hmm. That's it. And they're well, well worth the money.
Mm-hmm. And they're being offered actually by Mainline Theater. The publicity workshop is being offered by Jeremy Heckman and Patrick Goddard, who are the fringe gurus of this town. And the grant writing workshop, I've actually taken it before myself. It's offered by Patrick Goddard, and the $50 is well worth it.
Business speak, your ROI is... return on investment
yeah.
is extremely high.
There you go.
And then the free workshops?
Well, the TAP workshop will be free, which I mentioned earlier. The RASA workshop is by donation, so that means what it means to you. And then there is a contact improvisation workshop, which might as well be free. It's $10, super cheap, for 2 hours of a really well-led structured improvisation workshop. Because, yes, it sounds like, you know, how would you teach that? But there's lots of theory involved. And
when you throw out your elbow like this, you got to look and make sure that there's nobody's face is where the elbow is going.
Mm-hmm. And let's maybe go through the events in order to let everybody know.
Because that's also when they are.
Is everything happening? We'll start with the events. Our opening night for Commotion Farms Dance Week is Monday night at Mainline Theater. We are having Anissa's Movie Monday coming to help us out. And doors are open at 7:30. Films are starting at 8 p.m. There's also trivia. We are showing Break-In and Break-In 2, Electric Boogaloo, cult films from the 80s. Awesome.
I remember seeing them when they came out.
And then we're going to have a couple days of break where there's going to be some workshops. And then our next event is going to be on Common Space Showcase, Thursday, January 14th at 8 p.m. And the tickets for that is $10 or $8 for students. That show is happening again on Saturday the 16th at 4 p.m. and 8 p.m. Just a little note. The matinee is 4 p.m. We decided 2 p.m. would be a little too early for us.
Exactly, especially if you have the show the night before.
Yeah, exactly. And the night before is the Indie-ish Dance Mess that is being produced by Indie-ish.com. That's Friday the 15th at 9 p.m. And that is also 8 p.m. for students, 8 p.m. $8 for students, $10 for adults. And then we have our closing night party, which will be after the Saturday night of Common Space Showcase. We're going to have some DJs. We're going to dance. We're going to have a good time to celebrate. Mm-hmm. And then we have our workshops.
That's the thing. I have the flyer here, and it doesn't tell me when the workshops
are. No, it doesn't, does it? Well, for the very accurate dates and times, you should go to our website at www.commotionfarm.com with one M.
C-O-M-O-T-I-O-N-F-A-R-M.
That's it. But best I can figure, maybe Amy, you can correct me on this. Tuesday night, we have our grant writing workshop, which is 8 o'clock.
8 p.m. 8 to 10 p.m. is a grant writing workshop with Patrick Goddard.
And that'll be at Mainline Theater.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next day, on the Wednesday, we have the publicity workshop with Jeremy Heckman, and that'll be at
2 p.m.
2 p.m. at Mainline Theater as well. And then Thursday, I do believe it's 4 to 6, that'll be the Contact Improvisation Workshop with Mika, and that'll be at the Wants and Needs Studio. That is at 10 Pine West.
Okay.
And two more.
Mm-hmm.
Friday, 2 to 4, Wants and Needs Studio again, you get your RASA workshop in, and then Friday, 5 to 7, will be our TAP workshop at Mainline Theater with Heather Keeler.
Mainline Theater is 3997 Salar, right above Siegel's.
That's it.
Right next door to Le Vieux Saint Laurent.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I thought you were going to go on the other side of the theater. I was like, whoa.
Cool. At which point, if anybody has any questions, No? Okay. Thank you very, very much. Good luck on all of it. I am certain I will hear lots about it because, Alice and Elizabeth, you're going to be here next week to explain how and everything went. And then I'm certain that my arm is going to get twisted. I'm at least good. Yeah, I will not be able to show my face if I don't make it to at least one of the shows. Yes, and there we have been playing a series of interviews with Trisha Brown done by Charles Reinhardt, who is the director of American Dance Festival down in Duke, down in North Carolina. We got part five for you now. I should also mention, yes, before we go into that, it is 2:45. This is CKUT Movement Museum. It's 90.3 FM on your dial. You can also download this anytime you want. movement-museum.blogspot.com. We're Twittering, we're Facebooking, we're Identiking, which is actually Deets, I think, is what they use as their term. There is, email, movement@ckut.ca, and give this interview with Trisha Brown a listen.
If somebody was going to write or talk about you 100 years from now, and they will, and you were that person, how would you describe it, what it is you're doing now?
Right now, not 1970, 1993.
Well, I think I would love to enlarge it to take the scope of everything you've done today,
uh-huh,
because of your original path.
Uh-huh.
How would you as a critic write that, or as a historian write that?
I think you've got to take me in parts. I do work in cycles, and I remember once saying that I'm not like the reptile who discards their skin, I discard the body and the skin goes on. I don't know if that still holds up. I think the whole animal goes on now. Has the permission to take from whatever part of the body I want in my making of a choreography. I don't know how it's too big of a topic to go through each of the cycles of work that I have been through.
How many cycles would you say you've been through?
Well, there's the equipment piece cycle. Let's not talk about experimentation at Judson. Then there is the mathematical systems of the accumulation pieces. Then there is the unstable molecular structure in which this elusive vocabulary of movement is joined by a system of choreography that overlays things so that one... Anyway, okay, that's the third. Then comes the Valiant series, in which I began to work with the more emphatic, powerful gestures and to interrupt that free-flowing, sensual, fluidic style of movement that was so prominent in my work in the late 70s and early 80s. To coordinate, to organize that movement according to a non-system collage, which is, in fact, informed instinct. And from there, I'm now working with the unconscious. I'll be woo, woo, woo by the end of the 90s.
That's amazing. I don't know where you could ever go from the unconscious.
No, I don't. I may not.
But you could go forever on the unconscious, couldn't you?
Yeah,
Trisha, that was wonderful. There's really one more question, which is, you're a mother, you're a wife, You're a choreographer and a company director. And I emphasize that because that's a whole other level and area of responsibility and headaches. Could you change any of it?
I love being a wife and a mother and a dancer and a choreographer with unalloyed passion. The directing of a company, of a dance company, has gone into a period of question in the last year for me.
Okay. And, you know, you mentioned the dancer, and I did not, and I'm glad you did. For, I didn't see you dance in 54 when you graduated high school. It was probably another 8 or so years after that that I saw you, and then I see you now, and I've never seen anybody like it. You are dancing as strong, as beautiful, better in some ways because of the wonderful maturity you've added on to the incredible technique. I've never seen anybody else able to do this. How do you do it? What's your training? What do you do for yourself?
Well,
you have a portrait in the cellar or something?
No, I think you're right. I think I do dance better than I used to, because I found myself reaching plateaus where the technique of youth wasn't handling the reality of 10 years later, and I would have to go back into retraining, and I did, and right now, I've been through a lot of release techniques and Alexander technique, not a lot of Alexander, but Elaine Summers, a lot of Elaine Summers. And now working with Susan Klein and Barbara Mahler, who have a system of movement that connects up the body using the skeleton and the bones, the muscles closest to the bones. And it works for me. And I can't do enough of it. It's not the kind of an exercise program where you go, oh no, not 20 more reps. It's like eating. overeating. It's a sumptuous banquet of things for my body to do. And I eat macrobiotics, so I'm lighter than I'm not as I can't think of how to structure the sentence. I weigh what I need to weigh. I don't weigh anymore. And I care a lot, and I love a lot. And I have a lot. I am enraptured by dancing and its potential. And I find myself now dancing at between 56 and 57, firing off in a jump and not coming down when I'm supposed to. And I can't figure it out. It's hilarious.
It's beautiful.
It's as if my daemon got out in front of me and winked at me. And then the next, it actually frightens me a little bit. I mean, because I know the stereotype, a stereotype, at least you know what to expect with it. But when it collapses, there are no boundaries, and I am sometimes frightened with what I do, and so the next day I might not dance, you know, out to the edge of the moon. I might just trying to figure it out. I'm beginning to trust it more. It's here. It's what I am doing. And I'm very grateful.
So are we, Trish. Is there a Tricia Brown technique to teach?
No, there's some concepts and attitudes and secrets and an amalgam of many things that have worked for me that I like. And in the next couple of years, we are going to take on the task of making it available to the general public. Whether it will all be from me or borrowed and acknowledged, I don't know. But it is a task that we know that we want to do.
And that was Tricia Brown being interviewed by Charles Reinhart, Charles L. Reinhart, down in North Carolina, probably about, 10, 15 years ago. The more I listen to her, the more I hear her, the more impressed I am about her. It is 2:56. You're listening to Movement Museum. My name is Zeke. I'm here with Allison Elizabeth, Amy Blackmore, and we have, 4 minutes to fill with stuff about dance in town.
Sounds good.
And, the one thing that I sort of quite like is one of the things that I find is a sort of hidden treasure here in town is the library at the ESBCM, École Supérieure de Ballet. But then what's the CM for?
M would be Montréal.
Contemporaine
de Montréal.
Thank you very much. And, that you guys know about the library.
I snuck in there once. They have a fabulous selection of stuff, and videos and books.
Yeah,
and
you don't have to sneak in there. We have a couple.
No, they saw me. They made me register, etc. But it's a wonderful library.
Yes, and there it's I'm slowly learning about it. And apparently, Vincent Warren, who used to dance for the Grand Ballet Canadien, he then had this whole humongous library that he then, I don't know if he moved or just decided, I can do better things with these books than just having mine and taking complete possession over them and not sharing them with anybody. So he went to the school. He then donated the books. They put them into a whole nice room and stuff like that, called it a library. And now, he seems to be in the news lots, because I think it was back in September or October, he got got named to the Order of Quebec, which I think comes with a nice $50,000 check.
Wow.
But you got to do impressive stuff to be part of that. And then the school, the ESBCM, has now gone and named their library after him. And then in a very, very nice twist where I'm slowly pushing, because as you know, dancers sometimes have their own focus, but I know a woman who knows Mr. Warren, and I've been sort of asking her very nicely and slowly but persistently, can we do an interview with him? And she is saying, I will try. I'll see her probably at the beginning of February, and I might even go so far as to ask if I can just get his email address or his phone number or his home address. I can actually look it up in the phone book probably, because he is sort of older. He will have a phone that does go to an address that's in the phone book.
That would be really great. I imagine he's a really good resource for information.
Yes. Plus, from what I understand, he was also a kick-ass dancer.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But then speaking of nice checks, back in... what was it? I think March, we interviewed Tammy Forsyth. You guys know Tammy?
I've heard the name.
Okay, Tuscan Dance is her company.
Tuscan Dance.
Yeah, and she just got a nice check from the government for $15,000 because she won the 2009 Victor Martin Lynch Staunton Award. And it's a mouthful of a name. I don't have no idea who he is, but it's always nice when sort of local artists make good. And check for $15,000 is way better than a kick in the pants.
Goes a long way.
Do either of you know who Victor Martin Lynch Staunton was?
No.
Okay, then obviously.
we need to go to that library and research.
Yeah, I think so.
Although there it's also, we can have a bone to pick with Canada Council, because they're the ones who administrate it, and if they're not doing their job and sort of making everybody aware who that person is, then what's the point in naming the award after them? It's the whole idea is to preserve the memory, and if there is no preserving, then yeah. But anyhow, congratulations to Tammy. I hear primetime running around behind me, which means we have just about run out of time. I'd like to thank Amy. Thank you very much for coming in and telling us about your dance week. One last time, what's the email address? Not the email address, the website address?
www.commotionfarm.com. That's commotionfarm.com.
Cool. And it goes from Monday through till next Saturday with kick-ass performances on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, right?
Exactly.
And then, all sorts of other sort of workshops in between.
And a movie night Monday.
Yes. Breaking and Breaking, too. Well, Allison Elizabeth, thank you.
Thank
very,
you.
Very much. And, yeah, thank you very much, all you listeners out there, for listening. We will be back here next week at the same sort of time, 2 o'clock on Thursdays, talking about Dance on Your Radio.